Acres and Pains, the harrowing farm memoirs of American humorist S.J. Perelman, with Colin Stinton as the author. Part 1, There Ain't Nobody Here But Us Suckers.
If you can spare the time to drive 60 miles into the backwoods of eastern Pennsylvania, crouch down in a bed of poison ivy, and peer through the nettles, you will be rewarded by an interesting sight. What you will see is a middle-aged city dweller, as lean and bronzed as a shad's belly. I keep a shad's belly hanging in the barn for purposes of comparison, gnawing his fingernails and wondering how to abandon a farm.
Who's that crouching in the poison ivy over there? I could have sworn I saw someone. I'm being watched. Laura!
Calm down, Laura. Sid. There's no one there. You're just over-anxious. Here, I brought you a drink.
Over-anxious? Of course I am. How am I going to get rid of this farm?
That may be a redundant question. The way your blood pressure is, it could well get rid of you first.
Exactly. But I've tried everything. Raffled it off, let the taxes lapse. I've even sidled up to strangers and whispered, "Psst, brother, want to buy a hot farm?" Only to have them call a policeman.
And I bet he didn't want to buy it either,
I'm glad somebody finds it amusing. As far as I can see, it's impossible.
All right, dear, calm down. Remember, we came to the country to relax.
It wasn't always like this. I began my career as a country squire with nothing but a high heart, a flask of citronella, and a fork for toasting marshmallows, in case supplies ran low. In a scant 15 years, I've acquired a superb library of mortgages, mostly first editions, and the finest case of sacroiliac known to science. Still, I've only myself to blame. Damn it. I never would have found myself in the middle of 83 unimproved acres had I been a bit less courteous. One day back in 1932, I was riding a crosstown trolley in Manhattan, going to buy Laura a fur coat, when I noticed a little old lady swaying before me, arms laden with bundles. Though almost 30, she was very well preserved.
Gee, what a hot patootie. Hot cha-cha-cha.
Well, hello. You seem a sophisticated type.
Yes, it's kind of hard to believe. I'm just a country boy at heart.
Really? What a coincidence.
Dislodging the passenger next to me, I offered the lady the seat, and we fell into conversation. It soon developed that we had both been reared in the country and shared a mutual love for wildflowers and jam. The next stop, I persuaded her to accompany me to a wildflower and jam store where we could continue our chat. It was after her fifth glass that my new friend confided her desperate plight.
Oh, Mr. Perelman. Sidney.
Call me Tiger.
What am I to do? My poor, aged parents are about to be evicted from their farm unless...
Yes?
Unless I can raise $500 immediately. You don't know where I could find that sort of money, do you? Tiger?
Through the startling coincidence I have now come to know as extreme bad luck, this was exactly the amount I happened to have drawn from the bank to buy my wife her fur coat. Under the circumstances, I did what I'm sure Laura would have done, had she been a complete imbecile. I pressed it on the fair stranger and signed some sort of document, the exact nature of which escaped me.
Hey, this looks a bit like a deed.
Yes, indeed it does, doesn't it? Well, I must be going.
Oh, gotta tell the folks the good news, I suppose.
Something like that. Look, here's my card. Thanks for everything. You just don't know what you've done for me. Bye.
I waved her farewell. Then, on examining the card, I noticed a curious inscription in fine print. Licensed real estate agent.
Damn. I wonder how Laura will take this.
You did what?
Phew. We sure are tough on glassware in this family.
The moment I scratched my signature on that deed, on a distant farm property in another state, mysterious things began to happen. Wells that had bubbled merrily for over 200 years suddenly ran dry. Stone walls developed huge fissures, and chimneys sagged out of plumb. Despite this, when I first viewed my new property, my dewy naivete was incredible. Dewy naivete, the agent who showed me around, had to suppress a smile.
Well, Mr. Perelman, you sure surprised me. You actually like the place, don't you?
Oh, yes. I've dreamt of owning my own farm out in Pennsylvania for, days now. And just look at this room.
You mean this decrepit old hen house?
Nonsense. A vigorous dusting, a small can of enamel, that's all it needs to convert it into a snug guest cottage. Can't you see it?
Maybe.
And neither could I, as soon as I took possession. All that greeted me was a yawning pit trimmed with guano and eggshells, along with all the local handymen, eager to keel-haul the greenhorn from the city. The first bumpkin was commissioned to paint the barn. Several days later, he notified me that 47 gallons were exhausted.
No use skimping, no sir. A hickory stump, a widow woman, and a barn has to be protected from the weather.
Overcome by such devotion, I ordered more paint. And just as well, for it was obviously a popular color. A week later, all the barns in the neighborhood burst forth in an identical shade of red.
Now, ain't that a coincidence?
He observed, as he drove away in his brand new pickup. The most brazen brigand of the lot was the kinsman of Jesse James who repaired our road. Edward Mittendorf and his merry men spent a fortnight lounging about in well-cut slacks, pitching quoits, and reading Kierkegaard. Occasionally, one of the more enterprising workmen would saunter over and deposit a pinch of gravel daintily in the ruts. The bill arrived on time, though.
Here you are, bud. All up to date.
Oh, heck, this is like an annual report of the Federal Reserve. What are these things? Depreciation on shovels, lemonades for the men, bridge work for your niece. And look at this salary. Who's Ed Mittendorf?
My cousin, the little fat fella.
Is he the same as Eddie Mittendorf?
Oh, no, that's my dad. And Ned Mittendorf there, he's my uncle. I'm Edward. Got that straight?
I should. Your name's down here twice.
Is it? Well, I swan.
I swanned also on reading the total, but I paid through the nose, a locale which was rapidly taking on the aspect of a teller's window. Now, if you ever drive up the lane, be careful. Those diamonds raise hell with your treads.
Shall I call the garage?
Yes. And Cartier's.
Our first visitor motored up soon afterwards. In the country, folks are very matey. There's always an extra stiletto for a newcomer and a friendly hand to tighten round his throat. Grundy called on us while Laura and I were knee-deep in a puddle outside our front door, exchanging shrill taunts and questioning each other's legitimacy. He pulled into a flower bed and got out.
So, they finally unloaded it today. The old pest house.
What do you mean?
I mean, they finally found a simp to take it off their hands.
Oh, I don't know that that's...
You the hired man?
No, the simp.
No hard feelings, brother. My name's Grundy.
Listen here.
Yeah, you got plenty to worry about. You'll never be able to drink the water. It's tainted. And that woodwork of yours is alive with termites. What you give for this root cellar?
Oh, nothing. We took it for a bad debt.
Well, you were stung. Look at this putty. Yep. It's the talk of the countryside.
Haven't you anything
better? And you see that stream down there? Every spring it rises to the second story. You'll be doubled up with rheumatism if the mosquitoes don't get you first. If I were you, I'd pitch a tent outside and use the dwelling for a cow stable. Only watch out where you camp. The grass is full of black widows. Well, best of luck, neighbor. You'll need it.
I entered the house to find my wife in tears. She cried for 6 days, and on the seventh created apple butter. It was good, but not like the woman's next door. Despite incidents such as these, every now and then, on a breathless August evening, I like to draw up my easy chair before a glowing fire, puff on a calabash, and stare thoughtfully into the flames. The heat is unendurable, and the calabash makes me nauseated, but it helps me recall the architects who have almost remodeled my quaint old stone farmhouse.
Sid, are you all right?
Damn it, Laura, for the money I've spent on blueprints alone, I could have raised the house, erected a replica of the Taj Mahal, and retired to Sun Valley.
Throw another house plant on the fire. Maybe that'll make you feel better.
A little. If I ever adopt a coat of arms, it'll show a ravenous draftsman sighting through a transit over a shield marked Soft Pickings.
Yes, dear. And you could get one of those nice draftsmen to help you design it.
The most recent architect I engaged was as typical as any, even though he came highly recommended by my attorney, Newmon Hay, of Ashen, Livid, and Hay. After outlining my needs over the phone, he dropped round to make a cursory, grumbling survey of the house.
It's a mess, but maybe I can save it.
That would be just dandy of you. Now, I suppose you want to look inside.
Are you trying to teach me my own business?
Oh, no, it's just that
I know exactly what you're hoping for.
You do? That's good.
Which is why I'm going to ask for 100 on account. And not that I don't trust you, of course. More a sign of good faith.
Yes. My good face. Here.
Which was, quite naturally, the last I saw of that particular architect for a while. The following Monday, at 3 o'clock in the morning, he phoned me with a frantic appeal for another 100.
Yes? Hellman, you old skinflint. It's me. I'm ringing from the hospital. My wife's undergoing a serious operation, and the surgeon won't even so much as pick his gloves up if I don't slip him another 100. You gotta advance me another C note, you miserable tightwad.
Who could refuse such a heartfelt, sensitive appeal? By the time I got the preliminary sketches, Sir Christopher Wren had put the bite on me for $400. The first contractor I consulted estimated the job at $21,942. The second was unable to read the plans. And the third...
Ah!
6 months afterwards, I met the architect on Fifth Avenue with a friend. He cut me dead.
Hey, Frank, see that little sneak? If I had the money he owes me, I'd be in clover.
Though I tend to associate nettles with being stung. When I first moved into this badger hole some years ago, the theory was that I would lie in a hammock under the collected works of H.D. Thoreau and breathe gently through my gills until sleep knitted up the raveled sleeve of care. For exercise, I planned to raise to my lips at regular intervals a small vase of fruit juice laced with gin and banked with fronds. I hadn't reckoned on being hit by Hurricane Laura.
Sid, wake up!
What?
You've got to do something, Sid. The closets are all too shallow for my evening gowns. There's no conservatory. This place is no better than a chicken coop.
Ah, then at least you're prepared to concede it's no worse.
Sid?
All right. I'll issue a writ for the necessary artisans. Anything for a noisy life?
For a month, nobody appeared. Then, one morning, about 4, I awoke to find myself in the middle of Donnybrook Fair. A well-digger's derrick had sprung up at the foot of my bed and was boring towards China at $2 a minute. A gang of carpenters was hurriedly erecting a scaffold to afford a better view of the maid in her shower. I arose and, draped in a torn seersucker bathrobe, fell downstairs over a scantling.
You all right, Mr. Pebblerack?
Yes, I think so.
Good, because we're all out of cotter pins. Mm-hmm. Hurry back now. Bye.
I drove in my robe to Bethlehem, 30 miles away. A canvas of 5 hardware stores proved fruitless, but a few miles further at Easton, I succeeded in picking up some cheap sterling silver bolts answering the purpose. The carpenters interrupted their rubber abridge to examine my purchase.
Ah, you should have bought the bronze ones, but we don't need them anyway. We used an old piece of baling wire. Mr. Pebblerack?
I bedded down in the grape arbor and lived on potato chips for the duration of their work. At the close of business, they presented me with 2 gables of the original dwelling and the second finest collection of pre-revolutionary rubble, banana peels, and waxed paper in North America. I paid the bill from an armored car escorted by 6 burly guards, and the varnish was scarcely dry on the floors when a friend dropped in to see us.
Yeah, my feet keep sticking to the floor.
Yes, it's the varnish. It's scarcely dry.
So, what do you think of the place?
Well, you've sure got a dandy layout here, old man.
Yeah.
Why don't you shell out a few bucks and remodel it?
Calm down, Sid.
Are you...
Sid, put that chair down. It's okay, Carson.
That was Acres and Payne, adapted by Mike Barfield from the collected pieces of S.J. Perelman, with Colin Stinton as the author, Lorelei King as Laura, and Kerry Shale and Garrick Hagen as the country folk. It was produced by Jonathan James Moore. Acres and Pains, the harrowing farm memoirs of American humorist S.J. Perelman, with Colin Stinton as the author. Part 2. A Fool, a Pool, and the Meaning of Life.
Webster's Collegiate Dictionary describes a farm as a piece of land leased for cultivation, hence any tract devoted to agricultural purposes. I prefer my own definition. A farm is an irregular patch of nettles, bounded by short-term notes, containing a fool and his wife who don't know enough to stay in the city.
Sid, if we're going to continue to live in this irregular patch of nettles, I'm going to need a whole new wardrobe, you realize?
Yes, Laura, dear. Like any other fool, this one is soon parted from his money. And the way things have been going around here recently, quite probably his wife also. Not that we live here alone. In addition to us lovebirds, the farm usually contains a curious piece of statuary that comes to life at mealtimes and answers to the name of Leif.
Yeah, are the victuals ready?
See what I mean. I have had, seven handymen named Leif since I went back to the soil, though one of them was really only two 12-year-old boys who stood on each other's shoulders and shirked as a team. I never could determine their names, but I just made the check out to Leif, and it managed to get cashed all the same.
Drat. The pen's almost run out of blood. Pay Leif more of my hard-earned dollars. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
I found the original Leif in the weeds near the house the morning after we moved in.
Good God. Look at that.
Is it alive?
More to the point, is it human?
His mouth was open, and a wren had built a nest in it. Concluding that he was part of the lattice, I started to train a vine over him when he suddenly yawned and woke up. His first words of greeting were characteristic of the species.
She's a white elephant. She'll bankrupt you. You'll rue the day you bought this run-down chicken hovel.
I say, thanks for the welcome, but I need firewood more than fortune-telling. Now, take this hatchet and get chopping.
Oh, sharp.
I didn't trust him, but in a mere hour, he had procured easily enough firewood. A tad too much, in fact. I ran out to find our most stately maple lying across the henhouse.
You won't have to paint her now, Buzz.
You perfect imbecile.
Gee, thanks.
Summarily fired, he left to take up an important government post. He was followed by a drooping, melancholy individual who felt it was useless to plant vegetables or flowers, as the cutworm and the aphid were bound to get them eventually.
Tell me, sir, why should I lift that hoe? The Japanese beetle, so I have heard, is due to take over a week from Tuesday, and it would be flying in the face of Providence to resist.
You think so?
Yes, sir, and besides, I'm not well. Not at all, sir. I'm getting radio treatments for diabetes from one of them hex doctors in Allentown. And the blood clot on my brain is the despair of the medical world. Bad it is. And on top of all that...
Yes?
I have a terrible hunger.
He ate like a wolf and slept like one, too, if 14 hours a night is the norm for the species. He was still sleepy the second day when I drove him to the junction to catch the evening train. I asked him about his future plans.
I figure I may go out to the Mayo Clinic for a while. I don't want to alarm you, but my milt is enlarged 3 times its normal size.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much, sir.
Another check, Sid?
Yeah, it's kind of a nuisance making them out to myself, as Leif, but not so much as the real thing was, or were.
Well, don't stop there, honey. The builders have asked for the first installment on the pool.
According to recent figures compiled by trained statisticians working under filtered oatmeal, the first thing 94% of the population does on acquiring a country place is to build some sort of swimming pool. My checkbook had hardly ceased thrashing about in its final agony before I was out in honey-colored corduroy leggings barking orders at a team of mules and a scoop shovel.
Come on now, men! Put your backs into it! I don't want anything showy, just a fjord about the size of Lake Huron, deep enough to float a yawl.
Can't you see it, Laura?
See it and smell it, I'm afraid.
Our anemic little creek transformed into a crystal mirror bordered by gay cabanas. What a vision.
What I had when the workmen departed was a small, shrunken buffalo wallow, infested with every variety of poisonous snake known to man, and Leif. At night, a dense mist shrouded the farm, eerie lights flickered in the rushes, and if you ventured too close, you were likely to encounter a transparent citizen carrying his head under his arm.
Ooh, I told you, my milt was enlarged.
13 families of groundhogs set up light housekeeping in the dam itself, a massive affair of earth and logs that looked like the Union breastworks before Vicksburg. Every time it rained, the water boiled up, punching another hole in the structure. And I ran down the valley to pay the neighbors for the chickens it swept away.
And I lost Betsy, my best Rhode Island. That'll be another $10, mister.
Look, this is ridiculous. Here's $100. Get your flock some swimming lessons.
One morning, I caught myself cackling hysterically and ramming an old mattress into the dam to make it hold. I knew I was licked. It took a day and a half for the dynamiter to drill the charges and string red flags across the township. On the appointed morning, the whole place was busier than New London during the Harvard-Yale regatta. Whole clans of Mennonites and Amish bearing box lunches arrived from the backcountry in ancient buckboards. A bystander mimicked my gait and speech so cleverly that I could not help sharing the general merriment. Then, with a loud warning,
"Stand clear, all!"
the dynamiter threw his switch. When the dust finally settled, I had enough firewood for the next 50 years. Most of it right inside the house, where I could get at it.
Don't expect me to clean that up. I'm leaving.
Well, that's another maid gone.
The replacement was a sorry sight, a transplanted jitterbug, a tense, wild-eyed creature named Rhodesia, whose sole baggage was a makeup kit and a pair of dance clogs. Her face fell as we pulled away from the station.
I don't see no Ferris wheel. Oh! What are those things?
Trees.
But I was told you lived right smack on the midway.
Not to worry. The farm's only 3 miles from a bustling village of, 50 souls. And a neighbor's lights are clearly visible on the next ridge. You'll like it.
I don't think so. I'm sure this whole area is full of wild animals.
No. Only the odd werewolf.
She spent the balance of the trip alternately caressing a rabbit's foot and consulting the witch's dream book. We forgot dinner that night. Rhodesia cooked up something, but luckily time has helped us to forget what. My wife offered her a book to take to bed, but she chose a cleaver instead. In the morning, she showed her true colors.
That room was nothing more than a chicken coop.
Nonsense. There's been no chickens in it for almost a year now. And it's had a heavy coat of whitewash.
Her dream book, she added, predicted a calamity unless she left at once. I had obtained the same prediction by simply studying the oatmeal. And in a trice, Rhodesia was free, reasonably white, and 21. Even without a staff, we do attempt a small amount of agriculture down here on the farm. They don't call me Old Mac Perelman for nothing. They don't call me that at all, in fact. But not much more than your average New York City window box. I have no truck with lettuce, cabbage, and similar chlorophyll. Yet, come the middle of April, the family invariably gets the urge to see the old man beating his brains out in the garden patch.
Wakey, wakey, Sid. Look at these seed catalogs. It's gardening time again.
What? How come nobody ever gets the urge to see me sleeping in the lounge? If I'm not out there grubbing in the subsoil, you'd think I'm a leper.
Don't be so grouchy. Just look at these radishes, 2 feet long. Mm. And look, Brussels sprouts the size of rugby balls and yams. And let's have plenty of beets. We can make our own lump sugar.
Give me that. And what else do they have here? Look, an onion crossed with a pepper. And a new vanilla-flavored turnip that plays the St. James Infirmary Blues.
Oh, we must have that. That'll make a change.
And change is all I have left after the order has been filled. Within a few weeks, the plants are sturdily poking their heads through the lava and broken glass, just in time to be eaten by cutworms, scorched by drought, and smothered by weeds. And come the end of August, the harvest is always the same.
Tomatoes and squash? Is that all there is?
Yep, tomatoes and squash. But they sort of make up in bulk for what we lost in variety.
Well, why didn't you do something?
Well, like what? You can spray them with acid, beat them with sticks, and burn them. They love it.
Oh, well, I suppose I better get the cookbook out.
And a copy of The Day of the Triffids.
And what do 6 months of backbreaking toil boil down to? 2 minute jars filled with an appalling green emulsion. If you don't taste it, you're a cad. If you do, you're a cadaver.
Yuck. Yeah, now I know what to kill the tomatoes with next year.
Not that I just raise weeds or a four-figure blood pressure. I also have livestock. 6 months ago, I went off to an auction giving Laura this now historic phrase.
I'm just looking for a small family cow.
And returned with an animal roughly the size of the frigate Constitution.
Here you are, gentlemen. Zhang Wells Bijou Lass. The daughter of Brody Contralto by that great sire, glittering generalization. 7 times winner over the Isle of Jersey. Who'll forfeit their soul in exchange for this fine beast?
Here, I will. Take mine.
I spent that night doubled up in a feed bin in the barn, listening to the mammoth eat me into bankruptcy. I wouldn't mind particularly, except for a disquieting thought dropped by my doctor the last time we conferred.
Yeah, don't quote me, Mr. Perelman, but I believe you're allergic to milk.
You're not kidding.
Yep. Now, was there anything else?
Anything else? Doctor, when I first took to these hills, I was a sad apology for a man, reared on goose cracklings, rich sauces, and liqueur scotch. I was practically on the verge of collapse. Now look at me. I'm a new man. My cheeks have the ruddy vitality of a pail of lard, and my fingers are permanently knotted with arthritis.
Oh, it's not that bad.
No? My life insurance beneficiaries openly discuss me in the past tense. And besides, I think I'm coming down with something.
Yeah, I better give you a shot. Roll up your sleeve.
What?
Yeah,
hang on. Isn't that rust on the end of that needle? Shouldn't you use a clean one?
Oh, germs. Oh, feeds you that infernal poppycock. You can't see them, can you? Now, this won't hurt much. Come on, you big baby.
That night, I swelled up like a sunfish and went into acidotic coma. But I did achieve one ambition.
Don't worry, Sid. You'll be all right. Okay, take him away.
All right.
Bye, honey.
I was driven back to New York in a solid silver ambulance inlaid with rubies. And I intend to stay here as long as possible. Admittedly, I miss the rich multiple savor of country living, the fierce ecstasy of rising in sub-zero dawn to find the furnace cold and the pipes frozen, or the exhilaration of changing a tire by flashlight in an icy garage, but maybe I'll get over it. It's murder lying in bed here in an overheated room with a bowl of cracked ice nibbling bits of toast over the latest edition, but I struggle on. The doctors say I had double pneumonia with complications, which is a pretty understatement indeed for a home in the country. Goodbye.
That was Acres and Pains, adapted by Mike Barfield from the collected pieces of S.J. Perelman, with Colin Stinton as the author, Lorelei King as Laura, and Carrie Shale and Garrick Hagen as the country folk. It was produced by Jonathan James Moore.